Good evening, everybody. So good to see you. You know, there's a cute joke that's told. Kids are sitting around the kitchen table looking at their parents' schedule up on the wall, and they see it's Wednesday night. Sunday night, they were out at a wedding. Monday night, they were out at a Sheva Brachas. Tuesday night, they were out at a Shiva call. So it's Wednesday. The parents come into the kitchen and say, "Great, Mom and Dad, you're home tonight. Nothing's on the calendar." And they say to the children, "Sorry, we're on our way out." They say, "Where are you going? It's not on the calendar." So they say, "We're going to a parenting class." So we're always busy. We always have what to do. Okay, I want to start this lecture. I want to please excuse me if I look down at my notes. I usually do not speak with notes, but I just don't want to miss anything. So please bear with me while I do so. I just want to try to get whatever I prepared in because I think it's important. Just for my own knowledge, is this the SKA group? How is this advertised? I don't even know. Are you parents from all over? How?
Parents from all over.
Oh, okay, fine. I just want to know that. Okay, very good. All right, my name is, obviously you've heard a million times from the announcement, Hila Schwerd. I'm a clinical psychologist. I'm in private practice. I see a lot of adolescents, but more importantly, hi, you can come in still, I'm sorry. I see adolescents. I see a lot of young adults, a lot of college students. Do a lot of marriage therapy, pre-marriage.
Okay, the sessions are now beginning. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy.
Okay, premarital. So I kind of have a pretty good purview of what's going on over the years. And even more of what I'm telling you now is not really what I get from the adolescents I see, because I would say more than adolescents, I see young adults. And you get a more accurate read on what they experienced in early adulthood when they can actually describe and articulate what it was like in adolescence, which is great for me. I could even see it in a 35-year-old who can come in and describe her adolescent years and tell me what went on there, and we can trace how it affected her relationships later on. So it really is an important part of your children's, your daughter's life. Here we're talking about daughters. I am not specifically talking about girls here, although I would say probably most of what I'm saying is prepared more for a female population. Okay, as we all know, adolescence is a time of transition. Major changes are taking place in our children's lives. We see this in the physical sphere, the sexual sphere, the emotional sphere, the psychological sphere, the social sphere. And this whole transition we're going to call a process. It's a process that's evolving. And as a process, it takes time. Every process takes time, it takes patience, and it requires a lot of nurturance. And we have to really be very mindful of what's going on in our daughters' lives. And that's why I guess you're here. So, hooray, you made it here. That's excellent, and it's so good that you have that concern for your children. The issue really is, how do we go about nurturing a process where the people involved don't really want to be nurtured? In other words, we're trying to nurture children who aren't really children and they're not really adults. They're someplace in the middle. They're in some limbo stage that we're trying to help them through. And a lot goes on at this stage, and I'm going to explain everything, and so I'll get a firm grasp on what's going on. Okay, so we know, to some degree, adolescent stage can be exciting. There's, you know, your kids are growing up. Just the mere fact that they're growing up, they're transitioning, they're in junior high, they're starting high school, that's all exciting stuff. Anybody could come in. I'm not so mocking. Everybody who wants to come in.
It's an empty desk.
There are chairs right out here if they want to come in. All right. Okay. But by the same token, there are a lot of aspects. There are a lot of aspects of this process. Again, while they're exciting, we dread some of it. You know, it is still known, adolescence is known as the stage of storm and stress. There's a lot that goes on. There's a lot of storminess in that time. And how many of you in here have adolescents, have children 12 and above? Okay, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm sure you will oftentimes look at your spouse, see your child just in one of her moods, and say, whoa, she's nuts. She's crazy. How many of you can laugh at that? If you can laugh, you got an adolescent at home. If not, you're still doing good. You're sitting well right now. So what I wanted to talk about tonight is I wanted to talk about the behaviors, the tendencies that are common at this time. And okay, you're doing perfect. Okay. So I want to describe those various tendencies, where they plot on the adolescent spectrum, what's within the norm, where you should start perhaps getting a little concerned, and what can we as parents do to address what our adolescent is going through. That's probably the clincher. Okay, so let's start. We're going to start with what's normal, and I'm going to list you a few things that I think are pretty normal, par for course of the adolescent years. Okay, so number one is it is normal for them to be emotionally charged, turbocharged, I'd like to say, with emotion. Now, there really is going to be an evolution over the course of the adolescence, because at the beginning, in the beginning years, there's less cognitive stuff going on and more emotion. What I mean is as follows. In the beginning years of adolescence, 12, 13, you have the emotional immature system starting to mature, but it's highly charged. That means the parts of the brain associated with emotion, which we call the limbic system, they're highly, highly active. And the cognitive part of the brain, which we call the frontal lobes, right up here, this is the more important part of the brain, the more mature, the more involved in executive functioning. And executive functioning really means planning, organizing, controlling. That's all prefrontal cortex. That develops later in adolescence. And they're showing that the brain really develops. It's interesting. They show so many studies where you see the gray matter of the brain proliferating, growing, making more connections. So really, it's not that your kid is what they are at 12 or 10. Our brain is really growing. What research is showing is that it's really growing till early adulthood. So that's why your kids really are getting smarter. The thing is that what's happening during adolescence is that there's a tremendous lag, and there's that conflict between that very turbocharged emotional part of the brain, the limbic system, and the cognitive, the frontal lobes, are still not kicking in as much. Okay, so that's neurologically what's really going on. A lot of this is biologically based. They're showing today so much of it is genetically based, so much of it is personality based, and of course, we always come back to environment. Environment plays a huge role, what's going on in your home. But they're finding more and more, even despite what's going on in your home. We talk a lot today about the resilience literature, meaning that no matter what is going on, your kid is pre-programmed in a lot of ways. A lot has to do with genetics. Again, everything is important, and there's a huge interaction constantly going on. It's very hard to isolate one thing. Okay, so let's go back to that idea of the emotional turbocharged brain. So as a result of that, what do we see? What do we see as normal? We see that there is an exuberance for life. The kids are super, super excited. Everything is new. Everything is exciting. The possibilities are limitless. It's what's going on? Oh, I have this coat, but I want a new coat. They're constantly looking. I'm talking to this friend. There's a click. Who else wants to speak to me? They're always looking around, and they're excited about everything around them. Okay? And because they're so open and receptive to new possibilities and exploration, so because of that, that breeds that sense of excitement. So your emotions are extreme, and they're also very changeable. What that means is that the smallest event can trigger a very strong reaction. So their strong emotions of joy can also throw them into despair if something bad happens. Because, again, they're extreme, but they're changeable. So I could be really, really happy that I got invited to that party and really, really sad that I got a pimple on my face that morning. And both are really, really charged, and they have that equal weight to them. So that's what you're seeing when you're going to see things of that nature in your child. Instability of feelings, okay? Therefore, because they're unstable, we don't even know what their behaviors could be. Let's go on. One minute she could be dancing, next minute she could be crying. Okay, parents are going crazy. What's with this kid? What's going on here? Things are also seen, and this you have to understand. And even though I'm saying this as part of their thinking is really hijacked by their emotion. So even the way they think is emotionally based. It's emotional, we call it emotional thinking, meaning if I feel it, then it must be right. My feelings become my thoughts. That's what happens at this stage because, again, it's an immature stage of development still. So what we'll see is that there'll be black and white thinking. Either I'm good, I'm bad, I'm smart, I'm dumb, I'm ugly, I'm pretty. Black and white thinking. Overgeneralize. Overgeneralizing can mean if I do bad, I got a 90 on my test instead of my usual 98. I am so stupid, I'm a loser, I'm never going to make it. We overgeneralize from one thing and it becomes a sweeping generality as to who we are and what we are. Concreteness in thinking. This is all part of these early stages, a 12, 13-year-old. They'll categorize things. These are the good girls. These are the mean girls. These are the cool girls. These are the nerds, whatever. That you're going to see a lot of as well. Also, imaginary audience. Hyper-focus on self. I'm going to come back to this later on in the lecture. By the way, how much time do I have? I just want to pace myself. Okay. You'll see with that imaginary audience, hyper-focus on self. Everybody's watching me. If you dare walk into the school and you don't look right, they all notice you, Mom. You look terrible. Or, Dad, don't say anything. My husband has a great line. He says, your job in adolescence is to be embarrassed, and my job is to embarrass you. And that's how the relationship works. So there's stuff like that that's constantly going on, okay? Emotional reasoning is what I just said. If I feel it, it must be true. If she thinks you're unfair, you are unfair. There's no rationale behind it. That's the way I feel, and that's the way it is. Egocentricism, which we're going to come back to later on, it all revolves around me. It's all about me. You are here to serve me. That is part of the process. It changes, and everything changes. But this is what you're going to see at the beginning. This is what you're going to experience. And what I'm trying to explain to you is that it's all really brain-based. It's a very normal part of development. That doesn't mean you're going to have it. Some people don't, but chances are you can. At this time, I think it's very important to be very responsive to your adolescent at where they are. In other words, if your daughter is like really excited because she got really pretty all of a sudden, or her figure developed, it's very important to acknowledge that and really celebrate her for what she is. Kids really look to you for that approval. Even though you're going to hear it differently in 3 minutes, I'm not trying to confuse you. You're going to hear contradictory things, but really, they're all true. They're all a little true because they're in a state of flux. They are in that limbo stage. So everything's a little true. It's not because this lecturer here is sending you 55 different messages. It's all part of this process, which I'm telling, the process which is going to evolve. So it's very important for you to be there with them and to be mindful of what's going on. And where they need you to celebrate them and acknowledge them, they come home with a good grade. And you may feel to some degree, God, this kid is so self-absorbed. They're enough talking about you already. Yeah, I know you're popular. No, it's very important to sit with them and say, wow, unbelievable, to acknowledge everything they're going through and to celebrate it. Oftentimes, I will have patients, adolescents, if I had your mother sitting here, what would she say about you? They are clueless. They should not be clueless. Kids should have a sense of what you're thinking about them and how you think about them. That's very, very important. Okay, another thing in this emotional sphere, and I'm going to come back to certain things here, and you can have time for questions at the end. It's thank you so much. It's so sweet of you. Thank you. It's very important to understand that there's a lot of impulsivity that takes place. Because the brain is somewhat hijacked at this time, the rational brain is somewhat lagging behind in development. So because the emotional brain is more at the forefront, you are going to see that they are very impulsive, a lot of impulsive behavior. Why? Because, again, What stops our impulsive behavior? What controls our impulsive behavior? Frontal lobes. My frontal lobe says, hey, Shvert, should I do that? Should I go 90 miles an hour if the cop is right behind me? Nah, not a good idea, right? Should I spit in the principal's face? No. Should I skip class if the principal's right at the door? Should I go out right in front of her anyway? It's not kicking in. It's an impulsive, no, I need to get the ice cream. I need to go to the yogurt store. I'm going regardless. Okay, that's what I want you to try to understand that's going on here. So there's that impulsivity that you're going to see a lot of. And then finally, you're going to see in this sphere, you're going to see a lot of mood swings. Mood swings are very, very common. Okay? You're going to see happiness, sadness, what I just showed you before, what I was just talking to you about before. You're going to see sometimes it can happen in an hour where there's happy, sad. It can happen over the course of time. When should I be concerned? I should be concerned when I see depression, mood swings, things that once interested your child that no longer interest them. Then you start to get a little concerned. If they were good students before and they're not good students, if they broke up with friends that they were very close to and they're no longer so close to those friends, if they locked themselves in their room for hours, these are things that you should look into. If you feel you are an educated crew, I know who I'm speaking to. If you feel something is off, it probably is. And you don't have to wait that long to seek out help for it. If you sense it, learn to trust your parental instinct and go and get help for it. It could be for lots of reasons. It could be because she's shifting into a new time in her life, and there could be real biological changes. Sometimes it could just be a change of school. Sometimes a click switch. There's social things. Sometimes it could be a death, God forbid, in the family. Sometimes there could be a teacher who liked her last year, and now nobody likes her this year. There's so many different environmental things that can affect your child, but I do want you to understand that sometimes just these things, these mood types of disorders, do kick in oftentimes in adolescence. They usually blossom more later, early adulthood, late adolescence, but it's not uncommon with the hormonal changes, which I'm not even touching, because I figured you had so many other sessions going on, but the hormonal changes can contribute to it. Brain chemistry can contribute to it. There's a lot going on, so it could be real. You should know your family histories also, depending on what your mental health family histories are like. That can also be implicated in this whole thing, and it should be considered. Okay? So, again, when the sadness is ongoing, it's not something that she snaps out of. Also, when you see unhealthy behaviors that are replacing this healthy child that you once knew. And she's just doing unhealthy things, hanging out with a bad crowd. Religiously, oftentimes we'll look at SNEAS, a drop in SNEAS is a cue. Sometimes we'll look at irritability. You should know that depression in adolescence is not necessarily sadness. Sometimes it's just irritability. Stop bugging me. Get off of me. But again, it could be typical adolescence. So this is where you have to tease it apart. And I'll give you time for questions later to clarify that point. Again, we should try to engage them wherever we can and try to make whatever connections we can. We'll get to that. Normal. What else is normal? It's normal in us. I just covered pretty much an emotional piece. Let's go to something else. Socially. What's going on socially with your adolescent at this time? It is social. It is normal to want to hang out with their friends over you, to distance from you and not want to be close to you, and to resist your attempts to maintain that closeness. Friends matter most. You don't. You're, bye, Mom, bye, Dad. I don't need you right now. You can't help me get to where I need to get to. I'm telling it to you perhaps a little more extremely, but there is a piece of this in every adolescent, and it's normal. It's not so normal when they don't have this at all. It's not such great news. They shouldn't be hanging out with you too much. There should be some social, more of a pull to the social milieu at this stage. Why? Why is socialization taking such a major pivotal role at this time in their life? So what we learned and what we know is that as the years of adolescence go on, there is a tendency for the child to shed their dependency on parents and become independent. We refer to this process as separation and individuation. Separation and individuation is a very famous term that's used to describe what toddlers do. So here's a typical toddler. Typical toddler is used to sticking around with mommy, and then probably around 2 years old to 3 years old, they start walking away from mommy, and they take a few steps, and they turn around, and they take a few steps and turn around. What are they trying to do? So the mother, of course, stays there. Yeah, I'm right here. Mommy's right here. And they're wandering off. What's happening here? What they're trying to do is they're trying to assert their independence. They're trying to separate and individuate beyond their own. But they're still looking back. They're still somewhat attached. This is a similar idea of what happens in adolescence, is separation and individuation. Now, since the parental relationship was that which maintained the childhood status, right? What was it that maintained that childhood status? Mommy, daddy, I'm a child. That's how they perceive themselves. What the adolescent wants to do is they want to abandon the relationship to form a new identity, an identity which is separate from the parent. Okay, is that clear to everybody? The child does not feel that the parent is capable of helping him form his new identity. That's why they're leaving, because they don't feel that you are capable of helping them form this new identity. So what does he do instead? He turns to his peer group. He turns to his friends. She turns to her friends. And she sees, hey, what's out there? What are the opportunities out there? I could be this, I could be that. I'm going to experiment with so many different selves that I can be. But mom and dad can help me formulate. That was a child. I'm no longer a child. They were good for the child stuff. But if I want to grow up, I got to get away from them. They can't help me forge this new identity. So as a result, what will you notice? That friends are going to be more important than family. That what they say counts more than what you say. Their approval means more to them than your approval. They will give up their heartfelt values and convictions, things that you know you could swear my daughter loves vanilla ice cream. But if everybody's eating chocolate ice cream and that's a cool thing to do, she will dump that and choose what her friends are doing. That's just a fact. That's what happens. To some degree, the parent now loses leverage and position in their children's lives. Okay? Why? Because the child now is defining who she is. This is her period of time to define. And in order to self-define, she needs to separate from you. To a degree, every child is going through this. To a small degree. It doesn't mean they have to spit in your eye. It doesn't mean they have to ignore you. But they all are going through it. And, obviously, as they turn away from you and turn to this big bad world, then obviously they're going to become more vulnerable to the world beyond your home. Because this is where their future lies. This is where opportunity lies. Even if they always care for friends, they care for friends much more than they ever did before. To feel a sense of security, to feel a sense of self-worth, that only comes through the world of their friends. And their most intense highs and lows are going to be dictated by how they're faring in the social world. If they're happy, it's because they were involved and included, noticed, accepted. Social acceptance is the name of the game at this time in life. Okay? Even if getting good grades is important, there are other things that are important, still, socialization counts the most. That is the most important thing for them at this point. And the acceptance that they achieve at this point in life has dramatic effects on their self-esteem. Okay? You should understand that. Now, with girls have it a little harder here. It's a little trickier for girls. And the reason is because girls, to begin with, are closer to the parents. And they are forced now to kind of sever that relationship to some degree. And instead, who do they have to... So girls are used to being tight. That's in nature. We are so social. Women are girls, females. We are so relationship-based, relationship-oriented, that... You're saying, hey, ain't cool to hang out with mom. Okay, so where are the girls going to go now? Who are the girls going to turn to? They have to turn to their friends. Now, we know what those friends can be like. Those friends can be vicious. They could be harsh. And I can't believe none of you ever have encountered this, but it happens. I see it all the time, even on a subtle level. It can happen even in a very sweet, midos type of environment where you see, you know, they could give it to one another. So the girls really have a very hard time because they're holding on for dear life to those friends because they need that very close relationship, but those friends can be very cruel to them. That's why it's not so crazy that certain girls opt out of this whole girl thing and go for boys. They go for boyfriends because it's just so high. The stakes are so high in the female relationships because they need them so badly, but they're treated, they're mistreated, they're so vulnerable, and they can be mistreated also very easily. So, as a parent, what do? Stay connected. And I'm going to tell you that over and over. You stay connected as much as you can, as much as they'll let you stay connected. You do the things that they like. You try to find their interests. If it's cooking, if it's taking tennis together, if it's going for manicures, wherever you can slip into their lives in a subtle way, that's what you try to do at this time. Also, if you don't like the friend she chooses, don't tread. That's dangerous turf. Do not go near that. It's very, very dangerous because, again, these friends are helping herself define. She's turning to them for her new sense of self. And you say, I can't stand that girl. She's disgusting. She's mean. She'll pour me this, whatever. This is just what the kids are looking for, okay? This is what... You lose. I'm telling you right now, you lose. You will not be heard. It's very disconcerting, but this is really the reality here. Also, you have to be very careful. Some moms, and I don't know if this relates in any way here, but certain mothers look to their daughters for their own company, for their own friendship. It's not that uncommon, and it's very dangerous here because you create a certain, you impose your need on your adolescent. That's another pitfall, which I'm just warning you about. Don't get into that. And another thing that I want you to think about here is when it comes to your child who may have been, let's say, the oldest daughter. So she's always been very involved in the home, taking care of things, being involved with the other children. And all of a sudden, she returns to this adolescence, and she wants to go to her friend. She wants to go to Central Avenue. I had something like this very recently. And the mother says, no, you have your choice. You have to babysit. You have to help me cook for Shabbos. Now, obviously, we know about balance. I don't have to tell you this is olive base, that we need balance in our lives. But I just want you to understand, you have to be very mindful of the fact that she's going to pull away from home. That's normal. Let her go to Central Avenue. So you're not going to have that extra help in the house. Don't think, oh, she's going to get lazy and she doesn't feel responsible and she has to know she's got to be responsible. Be very cool about it. You have to let go. Certain parents do not want to let go. They're afraid of what this means. This may mean that I'm giving the message that she doesn't have to be helpful around the house or that her little brother isn't really important anymore to babysit for. No, it's irrelevant. What's really relevant for you to know is that this is part of normal growth and they're supposed to socialize. Poor dad. Dads don't like this stuff so much, they okay, as an outgrowth of that, I'm just teasing you. It's normal for kids not to want to communicate so much. Now, they don't really want to talk to you, and you want to sit and yap and talk, and let's come into my room, and we'll have long talks and everything. And they're thinking, bug off, Mom. You're not cool. I don't want you around. Don't take it personally. You could be the coolest mom, have the hottest clothing. It's not really about you. It's really about them. So don't let that get you too much, okay? However, they have to know that you're always there to listen to them. They have to know when I want and if I want to, Mom is there. Dad is there. Dad, you are important. I know you're sitting here and think, God, I'm not female. But that's not really true. You know, you're going to say that bracha tomorrow with a lot more kavana, I have a feeling. But you should know that when I speak to these girls, dads are super duper duper important. You are not, you know, this whole psychology, they used to think, you know, everything was blamed on the moms. Finally, we got some people around to say, you know what, dads do their piece too. So you are involved. They are looking to you. And especially if you feel that your wife doesn't have that relationship, then it's even more important to step in and to be available. Sometimes the mother-daughter thing gets messy. There's great literature on all this stuff, on the mother-daughter relationships. So therefore, it's important for the male to step in. And for lots of other reasons, which I'm not going to get into now. Okay, key point, take-home point here is to stay available, have a presence in their life. Just checking the time. Okay. Also, normal. Cognitive, to see cognitive changes at this time. Okay? Now, again, this is not contradictory to what I said before. This starts to evolve later on. So now we're talking, we're not like 12, 13 so much, now we're getting into the 14, 15s, okay? And this is when those frontal lobes are starting to kick up some dust, and they're starting to assert themselves. And what you're going to see now is that formal operational reasoning, they start to think, they start to hypothesize, they become these budding sophists, and anything you say, they can show you how you're wrong, and you don't really see it, and they're pointing out your contradictions and all this stuff. Everybody becomes brilliant all of a sudden. It's good. It means that they're able to think abstractly now. Abstract reasoning is developing now. It's actually wonderful. You thank God that they're starting to think, because once they start to think, then what's going to happen? That lag between the emotional and rational brain is starting to close up, and ultimately we're hoping that it will surpass the cognitive, will surpass the emotional, and be in control of the emotional. That's what we're hoping is going to happen. So if there is that rise in cognitive reasoning, hypothetical reasoning, abstract reasoning, metacognition, problem solving, since they're getting so smart, what that means is that you are going to find yourself in power struggles with them all the time. Okay? They have a need to assert their independence and create a new self. I am the new me. Okay? That's their focus. That's what they're all about. And at times there are struggles, not just between you, by the way, and your kid. It could be any authority figure. It could be the teacher. It could be the principal. It could be the crossing guard. They don't care. It could be the person in the store. They have total disregard for authority. Those are in extreme cases. What I didn't get to yet is when that disregard for authority is just too extreme. In other words, even if we're going to say there is a norm, sometimes when it's really outrageous, something else is lurking, and I want you to be aware. That's when you have to be aware as parents, like, okay, there's a little normal, but this is crazy. And when lots of crazies happen, crazy things happen, then you know something is wrong and you have to check it out. Because then it could be depression, it could be bipolar, it could be personality disorder, it could be lots of ugly things. Sometimes, which I didn't even discuss yet, there's a lot of just anxiety going on. I didn't even touch that yet. Somebody remind me to come back to that. Okay, so sometimes these power struggles are internal. Just tell me when I'm supposed to end. They announce it? Okay. All right, let me fly now. Okay, guys, hold on. We're going to go fast now. Okay, so sometimes these power struggles are internal. Internal means the kid herself is having issues living with herself, uncomfortable in her own skin. Okay? Now, a piece that I did not explain to you is that in this emotional state where it's turbocharged, part of what's happening is that the kid is learning, has to learn, like the evolutionary psychologists who say there's a rhyme and reason for all that's going on, because we're actually preparing ourselves to survive in this world. So we need all those turbocharged emotional experiences to learn how to negotiate our environment. We have to learn how to regulate. We have to learn how to get along with people. Meaning I could be enraged, but I'm not going to go kill the person. I can be so happy, but I'm not going to go too crazy. I have to be cool. I can't show all my colors. Everything has to be regulated. What I want you to think about in your own adolescence and just in general, even in yourselves, is the fact that the challenge here is maintaining emotional regulation. When we see a lack of emotional regulation, which is called emotional dysregulation, then we're a little concerned. Now again, everything is a little okay. It's a question of when it's not, when it gets too extreme. Okay? So remember that term, emotional dysregulation. So I'm going to give you an example, coming back to this idea of power struggles. What would be an example of an internal power struggle? Eating disorders could be a manifestation of a kid's need of a kid's need to assert control over themselves. Now, sometimes it could just be because everybody's skinny and therefore they want to be skinny. I'm not precluding that. If the reason they're doing these mishigasim is because it's social, that's okay. If the reason they're doing certain mishigasim is because there's something internally awry, that's when we check into it. The social stuff is understandable. It's when it's not the social stuff. It's when it's the internal pain that we become more concerned. Is that clear to everybody? Am I making sense? Okay, good. So eating disorders is an example of a manifestation of a kid's need to assert control over themselves. Why? Because they feel so vulnerable and so out of control that they will do whatever they can to maintain that control. I've seen it, and I've seen it bad. And that's what's really going on. Okay? Sometimes it's a struggle because they don't want to grow, like eating disorders. It could be, you know, I had a patient once who just didn't want to develop. She had a fear of developing and becoming a woman. That was a little different. Sometimes, though, there are struggles, and the struggles are really, really aimed at you. It's not your imagination. They're really having a power struggle with you. Now, why are they fighting so much with you? So there are various reasons. Sometimes they're fighting a lot with you because they disagree for real with something that you're doing. Sometimes they just want to prove to you, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, you don't call the shots. And sometimes they need to argue for a deeper reason. And that deeper reason can be, according to some adolescent psychologists, it could be because they really want to stay attached to you. That's the third reason. This is a way they stay attached to you. Why? Because emotionally, the teen is really confused at this point, okay? On one hand, there's the emergence of this mature self. The mature self is the adolescent mandate, which says, you don't need your parents anymore. That's what it mandates to them. But on the other hand, they have something called the baby self. And the baby self really wants to stay connected, and they're in a state of conflict. So there's a power struggle because really there is a state of conflict going on. The fighting that is often reported by parents of adolescents is a result of this tension. Even though the child rejects the child part of themselves, it's a lie. It really is still there. Okay, they say, I'm not a child anymore. I don't need you, Mom. But really, they're fighting within themselves. They really want that connection with you. And that's what the power struggle really is all about. Why? Because why do they want to stick around with us? Why are they so conflicted? Because we represent to them their most loving and caring and nurturing relationship. So they know they have to give it up because that's the adolescent mandate. But even as they're giving it up, it's hurting them and they don't want to and they're conflicted. And so what do? They get into power struggles with you. They fight with you. Because if they fight with you, what does that mean? It means that they're still connected to you. So that's what it's all about. And to some degree, I think there's a lot of truth to that philosophy. The teen is really fluctuating, alternating between the adult self, right? The mature self, fluctuating between the mature self and the child self, the baby self. It's going back and forth. Okay, so a kid will ask their parents the most ridiculous question. Hey, Mom, it's 11 o'clock at night. Can I go out to 7-Eleven now and get Slurpees? What's the answer? Why are they asking the question? And then you'll say no and they'll fight with you. Do they know really? Why can't they just put on that mature hat and say, sure, Mom, of course I understand. What a stupid idea. I don't know. Why would I ever think of doing such a silly thing? That's really what should be happening, right? But no, that's not what happens because really what the kid wants, they want Mom to get involved because if I'm involved with Mom, even if I'm fighting with Mom, at least I'm still connected, okay? And I've seen this a lot. As crazy it may sound, there is a lot of truth, okay? So if power struggles are normal, what do we do about rules? Do we just throw out rules since it's just going to be a power struggle? So no, because it's also normal for adolescents to defy our rule. Another normal thing. They're going to try to defy your rules, okay? Even though they're going to defy you, you still have to set the rules because they really want the rules. They just want to get around the rules, but they need the rules. Your job is to make those rules. Their job may be to break it. That's why even in the most extreme cases where kids are defying their parents, the parent has to say, you broke the rule. That's what we do. You broke the rule. Oh, I don't care about you. Blah, 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 blah. You broke the rule. These are rules, and they stay in place no matter what. Why? why are rules so important? Because the adolescent's parent is really part of him. As a teenager's own developing conscious. Therefore, what parents say and do has clear entry into the teenager's head. Meaning, what I end up as after my adolescent years is a result of what has been inculcated in me, i.e. via rules throughout that time. It's what I, those parents, what you guys, what you people, mothers and fathers, are planting into your kids now, it's, I heard a new term today, it's marinating. All your rules, all your ideas are kind of marinating in their head. And they're torn between them. Part of them says, this is the stupidest thing, I'm going to do whatever I want, I don't care what they tell me to do. But ultimately, when they creep out, and the frontal lobes start kicking in, when they creep out of the adolescent years, chances are they are going to adopt all your rules, and not only will they adopt them, but they'll impose them on their own kids, because that's generally what happens. Okay? What does this mean? It means that there's a voice, and your voice is in their heads. Now, what they're saying is every time they hear that voice, they're saying, get out of my head, Mom. Get out of my head. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to hear you. Right? That's what they're saying. But you're there loud and clear, and they know you're there. And that's why many times your kid will look at you, and it's normal, another normal thing. It's normal for your kids to think that you are criticizing them. Why do they think you're criticizing them? You don't have to say a word. Mom, you really think this skirt is too short? You really think I look disgusting this? Or you really think I'm irresponsible? You really think I didn't study enough for the Chumash test? I didn't say a word. What are you talking about? Why do you think you didn't study enough? I didn't say a word. But what have they done? They've internalized your voice. So they really know. And they're fighting against it. So they think you're being so hypocritical. Meanwhile, you didn't even have to say a word. This is all normal, 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 normal. This is all part of normal adolescence because they're fighting. Again, they want to be their self, but they have this voice in their head that they're constantly hearing and telling them who to be and what to be. Okay? And eventually they come out of it. They emerge, and they emerge usually with their voice in your head. Okay? Rules. Rules are important. Rules have to be normal. Know when it's worthwhile to drop them. Be smart about it. Choose, pick your battles, as we say, right? Also, by making rules, again, you're showing you're still in the loop with them. You're still concerned about them. You're still there. You're still the parent. And you still have that relationship because, again, that baby self still really wants the rules. Again, they want the rules. They just want to know how to get around them. Okay. Be firm. Reevaluate your rules. What was okay at 10 is not okay at 15. If everybody went to sleep at 9 o'clock, all the children went to sleep at 9, they're 15 now. It's not the same rule. You have to be a little flexible also. And you also have to just make a cost-benefit analysis all the time. And it's got to be ongoing. Don't be so stringent. Don't be so inflexible. It just doesn't work. You have to really be smart when you have to let go because they're trying to let go and you want to make it safe for them to let go. So as an outgrowth of all these power struggles, we talked about being critical, that they always think you're criticizing them when in fact you're really not. What's happening is that the adolescent hears you, but he's still denying that that voice of you is his voice. Do you get it? He's denying that that's my voice. He's still saying, that's Mom, that's Mom. Ultimately, Mom's voice becomes, Dad's voice becomes his voice. Okay. Normal, to be self-centered. We talked about this before. I'm going to just go through it quickly again. It's normal to be, for a child to revert to that baby self. Again, the conflict. I want to get bigger. I want to be independent, but I want to be a baby. Okay? And we see many times a contradiction in their behavior. So I just want to share two stories with you, which just happened recently. So a Friday afternoon, I ran out to get something right before Shabbos. I took my adolescent kid with me, sitting in the car, and I was dressed like a lunatic. Okay, I'm wearing these huge, ugly Crocs, like green, bright green or whatever. So I'm in the car driving. My adolescent is right there with me. I come up to my house. I'm ready to jump out of the car, and then I see my other daughter's Hudson in the car right across. Now, how am I going to get out of the car? Because they're going to notice me, and I'm dying of embarrassment. He's going to notice that I'm walking out looking like that. So I look to my adolescent, and I say, I'm so embarrassed. I can't get out of the car. So she said, I'm so embarrassed, too. So I look at her, I said, why are you embarrassed? You're wearing your Uggs. She said, no, I'm embarrassed because of you. I looked at her and said, wow, that's like, just in general. So we see with kids, with these adolescents, who they are so self-absorbed. They can be going out and doing the most exceptional chesed, saving the world, you know, going out helping special needs children, going to nursing homes. And then when they're home and you ask them to do something, they ignore you. Or you say, could you put little Joey in for a nap? Tough, I'm not doing it. So what's going on here? Are they that self-centered kid? Or are they that chesed giant that they show you? Who's the real? May the real child please stand up, right? So the real answer is it's the kid who is good on the outside. That's the real self. That's the real person. The stuff you're seeing at home is still that baby, still trying to stay connected, still trying, still not able to totally let go of that attachment in a good way. Another thing that's normal for girls. That to feel insecure. I didn't even touch the girls, the insecurity with the girls. There's so many reasons for this. So much of it is cultural. So much are the messages that our culture gives girls. What's important? What's valued? And again, because they have to make that detachment early on when they really still need the parents for support, that feeds into their insecurity that they're out in the big bad world when they really need the security of home. And that may contribute oftentimes to their feeling, that sense of insecurity. Do they look good enough? Are they accepted? It's very hard for them to get through this period. Let me just tell you some take-home messages that I'd like you to walk away with, and maybe we can come back to some other stuff. If you have questions, I could bring up the other things we spoke about. Just trying to think about what I may have forgotten. Okay, I'll figure it out in an hour. Anxiety. Okay.
Anxiety,
yes. Thank you. I want to talk about anxiety. This is another thing we have to look at because of the social piece, because socialization becomes so important, and because they're changing schools at this time, and girls are known to be really, really tough. We see that girls are worse than boys. They could be very catty, very jealous, very mean. More than boys. Boys will just punch each other out. Girls just know how to get right under your skin. A lot of times, a social anxiety develops. Now, anxiety can develop for lots of reasons, by the way. Anxiety can be you have anxiety in your family. Since you have that emotion, that charged emotion, anxiety is also an emotion. So that's also going to be a blow up at this time as well. So any type of anxiety can be very bad. You may see that all of a sudden they become afraid to go to school, afraid to go to parties. They become reclusive, test anxiety. All of a sudden, like the little things blew up. This is also part and parcel of this time. When it becomes crippling, we get them help. Anxiety disorders are huge. They're huge, huge, huge. There's tons of it. There's tons of it around. It's almost normal to have an anxiety disorder. It's crazy as that sounds, but yes. Okay.
I'm noticing with my adolescents, they have a harder time sitting in school. Is there a piece of
yes,
that?
Yes, there is a piece of that. Because a lot of the hormonal changes can affect sleep patterns, and it can affect concentration and that type of stuff. So it's not that uncommon. Again, providing she doesn't turn from an A student to D student, then you have another.
Their grades are fine, they just can't sit in the classroom.
They can't sit in the classroom. That could be sleep patterns, it could be hormonal changes. The literature does talk about that. Okay, these are your take-home points. Okay, number one, adolescent is negotiating. The adolescent is negotiating with different parts of self. Different parts of self. We're all a composite of lots of parts of self.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Orthodox Union and SKA, we thank you for coming to tonight's program on Parenting Your Teenage Daughter. Please submit your evaluation forms at the front desk upon leaving.
Okay, 2 minutes. You got 2 minutes, everybody? Okay, this is very important. Okay, so they're exploring different parts of self, okay? What they're trying to figure out is, who am I? Who do I want to be? What am I comfortable with?
Within the next 2 weeks, all of the workshops will be online at www.oucommunity.org.
Okay. So trying
Please help yourself to the materials on the table.
Frank, be quiet.
Before exiting tonight, we have a workbook of articles on tonight's program, as well as other subject matter.
Okay. All right, everybody with me? So they're negotiating in order to formulate a new and adult self. Our challenge as parents is to see the teen as whole. We should not get trapped into focusing on the bad behaviors. What they are now is not reflective of what they are going to be. Listen and hear me well. You never know. You never know with children. Don't look at them and say, never going to be a mathematician, never can do it. It's not true. Never going to have friends. Not true. You have to see your child holistically. They're a whole human being, and they have different parts of self. And just because you don't see it, or just because they're bad at it, or just because they haven't developed it, does not mean they can't. You have to keep that confidence in them, that they are always able to renew. We have this whole concept, hitchatshus. We can always renew ourselves. You have to convey that to your child, that they can always do that. Do not sell them short. Do not limit their ability to self-define. Okay, so I won't get to that story. Also, tap into the good stuff of adolescence. If they have that energy, which we started the lecture with all that untapped energy exuberance, tap into it. Don't keep them limited. Give them ways to direct their energy. Give them classes, get books, do hobbies with them, help them develop themselves so they have more means of self-definition. The more they explore, the more you expose them, the more they can self-define. Provide enriched environment. Find their areas of strength and channel them. Even if they won't give to you, they will be willing to give to others. If they're good, send them to a soup kitchen, okay? If that's what they're good at, they don't want to babysit at home and help you at home, maybe they can do that. Okay, next, point three, be present. Stay with the child. Not physically, although physically, but figuratively. Be there, be around for them. You know, and I know, that you can be in the same room with your child making dinner and just be out of space, okay? You're not there. You're thinking about your business deal. You're thinking about your shopping list. If you're there, be present with them. Let them feel that. They know. They're very aware of when you're there and when you're not. And it's very important that you value your time with them, because that will make you available to them. That's what being available means. That I'm not just in that. I was home. No, you weren't home, Mom. You were somewhere else, but you were not home. It shouldn't be like that. Be present with your kid. Okay? Also, make sure to have a sense of where they're at. Pay attention to what they're really into, what they're all about. Even if you can't talk about it with them, you should still know. And on some level, some tacit level, they should know that you know as well. Try to minimize chaos at home. Try to be more organized so when they're around, you could be available to them. Don't put up dinner and be like that, fidgety, when your kid is walking in from school, because that means you're not available. So try to schedule a little more so you can make that time, you can make yourself more available. Okay, more importantly, point four, keep your finger on the pulse of your family. What that means is be honest and realistic and know where they are at. Don't create expectations that serve you, but not them. What I mean that parents can all of a sudden decide, we're going to be Chal of Yisrael. The kid doesn't want to be Chal of Yisrael. The kid was never Chal of Yisrael. And all of a sudden you're imposing all this frumkeit on them. Okay, you don't want to make it a frumkeit issue. All of a sudden you decide, we don't take vacations anymore. From now on you have to work for your allowance. We're saving money. Now, unless there's some financial problem, just to change your rules, if you know your kid is going to go ballistic or that's not where they're at, don't do it. So don't make these new changes in your life if your kid, you know your kid will balk at it and you know they're not prepared for it. You have to be very sensitive to that. Why? Because they're already going through so much change. They're going through so much inner conflict. You don't want to create more conflict. Okay? And finally, show compassion to your child. Compassion. Compassion, compassion. They are going through such a hard stage of life. And when you communicate with them, it doesn't have to be, oh, that jerk, they didn't invite you to the party. It could be, wow, that must be so hard for you. That's all you have to say. They don't want you to problem solve for them. but they want to know that you are there in some capacity, and they want to know that that capacity is a compassionate one. While it is an exciting time, it is a conflictual and confusing time in their life. They have thrown themselves in the world, a world that is not generally as nice to them as you, their loving parents, are. It's a tough world out there, and we all know it. And they really have to do this task. So be compassionate, validate them. This is the biggest proof to them that you love them and you care about them. You don't have to be harder on them than their environment is. Okay, just remember that. You don't need to be harder on them than their environment is. Let them sense safety, at least at home. Home should be a safe place. And even if at times they're going to reject home, they will ultimately return to you in ways more than you can ever imagine. So good night, everybody. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask me.